Sports Radio 1290, CFRW Winnipeg.
We will be there. Come with us.
Your home of the Winnipeg Jets, a division of Bell Media. Insight, analysis, and opinions on all things hockey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290.
Even Drew knows that song.
90 minutes down, 90 minutes to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. See, I'm going to speak in rhyme for the rest of the program.
You know who that was, Drew?
I should.
When the levee breaks, right. Drew better know that it's Led Zeppelin.
There we go. Drew, you don't even know the music from when you were a kid.
Oh, well, an age joke. That never happens on this program. Amazing how that works.
Well, Roy McGregor's coming up. He was at practice today, and just so people are aware, he has been stationed by the Globe and Mail, the paper that he writes for, in Winnipeg until opening night, which is obviously October 9th, Sunday, against the Les Habitants.
Don't speak French. That's insulting.
Wasn't that bad?
That was pretty terrible.
And in all honesty, one of the best writers, one of the best Canadian writers. You know, we talk about sports writers.
Yeah.
One of the best Canadian writers. And he hasn't just written about sports in his career. And it's just really...
He's penned novels as well.
Yeah, and as Drew wrote, has said, you know, it's somewhat poetic.
Exactly. He writes in a very poetic fashion. I believe we have him on the line, so let's go. You know where we're going.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
And let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's from the Globe and Mail. Roy McGregor, welcome to the program. Roy, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, welcome to the program. How are you, Roy?
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it very much. You're stationed here in Winnipeg until October 9th. You know, so far, sort of a two-part question. One, what were you anticipating the buzz in the city would be like when you arrived here? And, you know, how does that square with what you've seen so far?
I thought it would be pretty high. I was here when the Jets left. I was here for the rallies. I was here talking to the politicians and the people who were against keeping the team. And I knew from that time on that there was a lot of pent-up emotion here. I also knew, because I'd been coming out on other assignments, that Winnipeg had changed rather dramatically. Not just the city, but the Canadian dollar had as well. And so that once it became feasible, I thought that people would be enraptured, and that's exactly what I've found.
Right, you're based in Ottawa, and you were in Ottawa, I believe, when the Senators came to be, the second incarnation of the Senators. Can you maybe compare the two and speak about whether they really are comparable?
Well, there's no comparison, really, because they were an expansion team, and it was a pretty botched job in Ottawa. They should never have gotten the team in the first place. During the draft, they kept trying to draft people who didn't exist. They had to apologize. They held their, you here in Winnipeg just have had your rookie camp and your rookie tournament out in Penticton. In Ottawa, when they held their rookie camp, they got one of the newspapers, the Ottawa Sun. They agreed that one of the delivery people in charge of the delivery and circulation could come and try out and then write a kind of an early blog. They didn't have blogs then, but he was to do a little column about doing it.
Wow.
His name was Larry Skinner, and he ended up leading the tournament in scoring. That's how bad they were.
Wow.
You know, and the entire year they only made the ESPN highlights once. That's when Andrew McBain. Andrew was a former Jet, of course,
and he
played for the Senators. He got thrown out of a game in the old Chicago Stadium. And in that stadium, unlike any other stadium I ever saw, you have to go down the stairs to get to the dressing room. The camera followed him down. He tumbled head over tail all the way down the stairs in full equipment. That made the highlights.
Roy, as was mentioned earlier, you're based in Ottawa on the East Coast. We wanted to get your take on what's the Eastern Canadian perspective on the Jets coming back, because we know that everyone has gone absolutely bananas here in Winnipeg, but what's it been like in Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, Quebec City, etc.?
Well, I think it's perceived to be kind of a cute and endearing story. It comes at a time when hockey's had perhaps its blackest year ever, beginning with Sidney Crosby's concussion on New Year's Day, and then the deaths of the enforcers, including one with the Winnipeg Jets, and of course the terrible plane crash. So, yeah, it's neat to have a happy story. People generally like to smile when they think about the national game, and so that there's a great smile right across the entire country of Canada with the Jets coming back.
You mentioned about the national game and the people's reaction to it. you know, you've toured this country from coast to coast to coast, and, you know, we were saying that you write very poetically about everything you see. What is it about this game that makes Canadians, normally, you know, a relatively mild-mannered group of people, tend to lose their minds?
I've always believed that hockey is the face that Canadians would like the world to see when they look at Canada. Hockey is about teamwork. It's about being tenacious. It's about working very hard and having an ethic that drives you toward victory. And it's about ultimately triumphing, usually in the world theater for Canadians. And then you have to hook onto that, the whole notion of you must not show vanity in hockey, so that the character that is most admired in hockey, whether you're talking about Gordie Howe or Wayne Gretzky or Sidney Crosby or Guy Lafleur or Jean Beliveau or anything, any of those people, any of the great heroes, it's always humility. And so it to me, at its best, and yes, hockey has a lot of problems, but at its best, it does show a wonderful side of Canada. I would even go so far as to say that it is the teamwork and the cooperation of dealing with the cold that ultimately turns us into a slightly leftish country compared to the United States, and why we even have things like Medicare. It's really about cooperation and teamwork.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Roy McGregor of the Globe and Mail.
Roy, you wrote this week about, you know, the players and their adjustment moving from Atlanta, where they could, you know, as Chris Mason said on this show before, probably recognized three times while he was there, to coming to Winnipeg, where they're, you know, it's a fishbowl. There's nothing else you can be said about that. How do you think the players will adjust, and how big do you think the adjustment will be?
I think it'll be huge. I think you should prepare yourselves for some very, very ugly stories. I think that this city is way too small, and that cellular phone cameras are way too prolific, mm-hmm. not to have some very seedy and unwelcome things happen for sure. And how that's dealt with is going to be rather intriguing. These are young men. These are young privileged men. These are young privileged men with extraordinary money, and these are often young men who like to party, and they tend to be extremely attractive to members of the opposite sex. So that you will have your Patrick Kane incidents, you will have your issues in which when the media, and if the media chooses to report on these, let's say something's flying around the Facebook or flying around the Internet in some other capacity, when you report on them, let me assure you that the messenger will be the one who was shot. You will be blamed for causing all kinds of problem to this Treasure team. For at least 365 days, this team and its players will be able to do no wrong whatsoever.
You know, you mentioned the media, and that's sort of, it's not really hockey-related, this question, but, you know, how do you balance the journalistic, you know, responsibility there? Is that, you know, if you see a picture of Patrick Kane or, you know, out on the town being what a, you know, 19, 20, 21-year-old doing the same things that any of us would do, you know, how does a journalist balance the two, you know, the responsibility for reporting versus the responsibility of sort of boys will be boys?
Oh, I think that's a very critical question, and each person has to make their own decision. If it becomes an issue that affects the player or the team, then I think it's obligatory that it has to be reported on. Otherwise, at that point, you're into a case of simply protecting people and perhaps doing even more damage. If, however, and I, as a reporter who's traveled with many, many teams, I actually could care less what the players do in their time off, and I think that there is a private time. Now, the problem is that I'm talking about an era that really has faded very, very quickly. There is no privacy whatsoever anymore. And I must say, apart from the lure of money, I don't think I'd particularly care to be a National Hockey League player these days, especially in the country called Canada, where your every single breath is measured.
Roy, you're going to be stationed in Winnipeg till the home opener versus the Montreal Canadiens. Maybe what can you, you know, tell us that you're expecting, you know, in the months, or pardon me, the days leading up to the game, and personally, what are you looking forward to, you know, leading up to that game on October 9th?
Well, the thing that you're going to have to deal with in about a week is the most incredible ennui you could ever imagine, the boredom that is going to set in. And people are going to be screaming at the top of their lungs, if only inside their own heads, drop the puck! Because it just gets to be an absolutely outrageous situation of wait and wait and wait. I think there's an 8-day gap, isn't there, between the final exhibition game and that actual home opener. That will be painful, let me assure you.
There's a provincial election in between then, so you know maybe people will pay attention for about 5 hours there.
That really helps. These guys come into, you know, hockey hasn't caught up to the reality of fitness. And I heard one of the questions this morning, I guess it was asked to that Zach Bogosian, do you feel a little rusty out there? And he kind of looked a little sheepish, and then he tried to answer it in a polite way. Well, of course he didn't feel rusty. They come to camp in unbelievable shape. They've been working out, as you know, because you were there watching them, together even, and doing basically their own drills for the last week or 2 weeks. And the only thing that's new is that they have coaches on the ice right now. You could have your exhibition games done within 3 or 4 days and launch the season virtually a month early, which I think would be the most incredible gift to hockey I can imagine. Yeah. Because living in this country, we absolutely should ban June hockey.
Agreed.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely agreed. You know what, Roy? We will absolutely leave it there. You couldn't have punctuated it any better. We thank you for your time. We'll be seeing you at practice, and we really do hope you enjoy your time in Winnipeg.
Thanks, guys. Great talking to you.
Take care, Roy. Thanks very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's head to commercial break. That was Roy McGregor. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. 10 minutes to 2 o'clock. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Producer Tim is our expert getting us on and off the air. Michael Remus is somewhere. He's been down collecting audio for us down at MTS Iceplex.
Well, he's going to cycle it over. He's biking
it over here where practice has been going on. Training camp opened, of course. Follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. The website is www.illegalcurve.com. In case you missed any of the program, any of the interviews with Shane Knighty or with Roy McGregor, you can download the program on iTunes, search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. But Remus was able to spend a little bit of time talking with Chris Thorburn earlier this morning. Let's play some of that audio.
You know, Eric Bolson's been ahead of you in fights, and now that he's do you think that you're going to take the lead in fights?
We'll see what happens. I'm a kind of guy that likes to stick up for my teammates and do whatever I need to do to stay in the lineup and change the course of a game, and if that means fighting, so be it. But I don't want to look at myself as just a fighter. I want to be able to contribute offensively and use my skills and my size to my advantage. So whatever it takes to make the team better and help us win, I mean, I'm willing to do that.
Well, I've noticed your fights have gone down the past few seasons. Is that, you know, trying to focus on more all-around game?
I guess you can say that. I've just got more opportunity as the years went on. I played bigger roles on my team rather than just being that fourth-line, five-minute guy, you know what I mean? So instead of going out there and just trying to spark energy by a fight or a hit, I'm out there killing penalties and doing some other stuff that helps the team win as well. So, but like I said, I'm not too sure my role, what it is here, but hopefully it'll continue as far as getting some power penalty kill time, and we'll see what happens as far as the fighting goes.
Chris Thorburn is sort of one of those depth guys that the Jets have been talking about a lot, and where we've said often on this program that, you know, those bottom six positions are going to be really filled by the guys who work the hardest.
Yep.
You know, he didn't, you know, 82 games last year, he had 19 points. You know,
played every game.
Yeah, he only had 77 penalty minutes. Well, you know, what does Thorburn really bring to the lineup? It sounds negative when I said it that way. I meant, what does the team expect from Thorburn?
I'll let Richie get in here for a second, but like you mentioned, he played 82 games. He was a staple of the fourth line. He's a guy that fights. He doesn't fight every night. I think he had six fights or something last year. Remus wrote an article about it, six or seven fights last year. But he's a guy that's going to, you know, play fourth line, maybe a little bit of the third line, but mainly a fourth line guy. Energy guy, and I'll let Richie, you know, elaborate on what I've said, but I just get this feeling. I didn't see Thorburn play a lot. I just get the feeling that he's going to be one of those guys that the fans in Winnipeg really like. I just call it a gut feeling, just based on the way he sticks up for his teammates and just seems like a guy that's a player's player. But I'll let Richie maybe elaborate on it a little bit more.
I mean, Chris Thorburn is a fourth line right winger, guys, and he played last year a significant amount of time on the fourth line with linemates Jimmy Slater and Eric Bolton. Now, Eric Bolton isn't exactly an offensive player. In fact, he's limited in his skill set. Thorburn can add a little bit more up front and can move around a bit in his better hands. But, you know, he's a fourth-line right winger, and he's got to be able to contribute in other areas of the game to be a useful player for the team. And right now, I mean, he's going to be in a battle for his spot. I don't think there's any doubt about it.
Yep.
You know, the contract, a guaranteed contract helps. He's an up-and-down guy. He's a big guy, and that helps. But, I mean, they don't lack for size on the right wing guys. Eric Fair's big when healthy. Blake Wheeler's big. I mean, these are big guys. Not necessarily the most...
Antropov, too.
Antropov, too. Not necessarily the most physical guys, but big. So a guaranteed contract is a friend to Chris Thorburn. Yeah. I don't question his, you know, his wanting to be an effective player and wanting a bigger role. But in the big scheme of things, he is likely to have a role on the team... nothing more that would then will exceed a fourth line right wing role. Remember, he signed for the next 3 years. Now he's under $1 million, but he signed for the next 3 years. He was not a signing of the current management group.
Rick Dudley.
Another contract, Rick Dudley. He's got to prove himself, but I mean, Thorburn's got to carve out a spot for himself and maybe kill some penalties and do like that. Remember, the penalty killing for the team hasn't been very good, so they might want to start afresh with all that.
You know, Richie...
Tanner Glass is going to have a role in the penalty kill, likely, and maybe some of the other guys. And I've written an article about on illegalcurve.com about the team's penalty kill and how bad it is and what they want to do in terms of shifting players in and out. In reality, guys, you know, moving off of Thorburn for a second, this team's had a terrible penalty kill.
Yep.
The only player they brought in with any kind of substantial penalty kill time is Glass, and it wasn't even that substantial.
Tanner Glass.
Yeah. McArdle didn't kill penalties, brought in from Florida, right? Fair didn't kill penalties. I don't think either of those guys had 1 second of penalty kill time last year. So what are you going to do to improve the penalty kill? Your roster hasn't changed that significantly. That's a question that needs to be asked.
Yeah, and I think it's a strong possibility. Andrew Ladd is a guy that's going to be one of the penalty killers out there, but there's a strong possibility that they're going to have to address this very quickly, but... there's some battles to be won. I mean, you know, today the practice at the MTS Iceplex was open to the public and you know, everyone got to see their favorite players, but you know, tomorrow there's a practice at the MTS Center, which, you know, obviously we'll be at, and you know, very quickly there's going to be some tough decisions for Claude Noel and Charlie Huddy and Pascal Vincent to make, like Richie addressed. I mean, are you going to carry a guy who's going to give you more offense, or are you going to carry a guy that's going to be more helpful on the penalty kill? And you got to realize that, you know, Tanner Glass, I think, has that edge right now to be a guy, whether he's penciled in on the fourth line or the third line. He's not going to be a second line or a first liner.
None of these guys are like a Vernon Fiddler, who's available in Dallas side. You know, a really good penalty killer can play those tough minutes.
Yep.
The team has to cut. I'm interested to see who's going to be the two penalty killing units for the most part. Mm-hmm. You know, 2-3 units because they take short shifts.
Could be Ladd and Slater.
Who knows? And Ezia, that also moves, you know, backwards to defense. Mm-hmm. And will Johnny Oduya have this bigger role penalty killing as he did last year? Will Mark Stewart have a bigger role? You know, will Dustin Byfuglien or will Enstrom? To me, Enstrom is the guy who needs to see more time in the PK.
Like you said before, though, the problem with Enstrom is he's a smaller guy, and you need a bigger guy out there.
You don't need a bigger guy.
With his lack of physicality in certain situations, but I agree.
You need a smart defenseman out there, and the question, you know, Oduya hasn't been great on the penalty kill. So what do you do about that? And he is a pending UFA. Does that factor into the decision? Are you going to give a development to a guy? You know, how much are you trying to work for now? How much are you trying to work for the future? There's a lot of questions that need to be asked. And, you know, Chris Thorburn's a guy that's going to have to carve out a role for himself as a useful player in some way. You know, you have to do – it's kind of like Bill Belichick says in his, like, good documentary. It's not within that documentary that's on –
You're not going to swear right now, are you?
No, but what Bill Belichick says is, I'm going to take what you do well. I just need to know what you do well
and make that better.
And I'll use you in that role.
Yeah. He puts players in a position to succeed.
Right. Yep. And so that's what you need to know is what do these players do well and how can I make them succeed? And that's Claude Noel's biggest task.
Yep.
Because the third and fourth lines, you know, maybe it is a guy like Jason Gregoire popping up and not going to the AHL and being good enough. Patrice Cormier out there today. You know, he's a rugged guy. He's not he's not afraid to bat. He's not afraid of anybody. He won't back down. Maybe he's the kind of guy who jumps into that role. Who knows? But you want those battles, and you want to see what people bring. So, you know, the exhibition games will not mean much for Andrew Ladd and Zach Bogosian and all these guys. But the battles...
will mean a lot for Jason Gregoire, Patrice Cormier, and Thorburn.
The depth players.
Exactly.
It's for the depth players to make their impression.
9 to 10 guys battling for the bottom six spots are really going to have to, you know, show their true talent to some extent over the next 2 weeks. And it's a short time frame, guys, because today is what? September 17th. So you have... 13 days and 9 days. You have 22 days, three weeks, until opening night, and you have to make sure.
It's a 3-week audition for some guys.
That's right.
Yeah, they got the 6 exhibition games. These guys who are battling, the 9 guys battling for the final 6 spots. How many of those 6 games do you expect to see them play?
They'll probably each get into
half,
3-4 minimum.
Minimum.
Yeah.
But yeah,
probably closer to 4 or 5.
Especially the split squad,
so they're all going to get into extra. Maybe 4 or 5.
Yeah, I mean, because yesterday that's what Bufflin said, is he would like to play about four of those games.
We should mention that for some of the people listening to the show, because I actually don't think everyone knows this, that the game against Columbus is a split squad game.
That's right.
So you're going to have to look at the roster, and it hasn't been released yet. I don't believe.
Who's
going to play on Tuesday?
I thought it might have been, but in any event, the split squad is something you see very commonly in baseball. When there's spring training games going on, the Jays sometimes will play the Yankees in one stadium, their home stadium, and play the Yankees in their road stadium. So it allows the talent evaluation. The fans kind of lose out, but who cares? It's preseason. The talent evaluators are able to see two games. So if they go to one game in person, they can watch the tape on the other, and they can kind of kill two birds with one stone.
Group A from training camp is playing at home against Columbus.
Oh, so they have released it.
Group B is the group that's playing at Columbus, and then Group C is apparently attending the game versus Columbus.
So on Tuesday night, you're going to see Pavlik, you're going to see Ladd, you're going to see Little, you're going to see Bogosian.
It's not set in stone by any means. I mean, I think that a lot of the guys that right now are in Group C might end up playing in Group A, and the Group A guy. I mean, there's no rule preventing them from switching it around. But, of course, as soon as we know who's going to be playing where, we'll be bringing that to our fans on illegalcurve.com as well as here on Sports Radio 1290. On that note, let's head to a commercial break. When we come back on the other side, we're going to do a little bit of our charitable good deed for the week. That's going to be talking about the Pass It Forward Hockey Equipment Program. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined by Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air. Michael Remus has made his way to the studio. We'll be hearing from him in the next little while. But let's go on the line to Kalen Qualley.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
And so welcome to the program, Kalen Qualley. He's a good friend of the show, and he's a guy with a very charitable spirit. Kalen, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Pass It Forward program, which kicked off in Winnipeg earlier today?
Definitely. First, I want to thank you guys for having me on. You guys are doing a great job, and the city's lucky to have you right now.
Appreciate that, Kalen. Thanks very much.
All right. So, obviously, a very eventful time here in Winnipeg. Goes without saying, today is the first day of Jets training camp. But for those that don't know, today, and beginning today and going until October 1st, you can bring gently used hockey equipment to any Perth dry cleaners location. And with the help of Pass It Forward, this hockey equipment program, we get all that used gear and give it to underprivileged kids in Winnipeg who might not get the chance to play.
Take us through the origins of the program, Kalen. Pass It Forward's been around for about 3 or so years now. You know, why did you start it? What was your impetus for founding this great program? And, you know, how has the response been over the last number of years?
All right. Well, I guess my impetus for the program was the first year was 2009, and it kind of started off as a school project. It was just a year-long project that I was required to do to graduate my program, and hockey is something that I'm really attached to. It's something that's affected my life greatly, and I've always been grateful for the chance to play it, but I've always been conscious of the fact that I was blessed to be able to play it. I had a lot of help from my parents, and not every kid gets that chance, so kind of brainstorming up this idea was my attempt at giving more kids that chance to play hockey.
You know, Kalen, we went to school together, took the same program, Creative Communications at Red River, and, you know, I have to say you've done a really good job with it. This is now the third year. Can you talk about some of the relationships that you've made and the response from the community? Like, what's that been like, you know, over your time doing this?
Yeah, for sure. I'd love to talk about that stuff. Of course, the first year of the program in 2009, all the equipment went to this program called Winnipeg Aboriginal Sport Achievement Center, and all the equipment went to the Little Moose hockey program, and I got a chance to meet a man that kind of helps run WASAC, Pino Pisano, and he invited me to come skate with the kids, and the first chance I got to do that, like, immediately realized, like, what the point of the program was and the effect that it did make on kids. So so even if people donate equipment and they question whether or not it actually reaches an end point, you can definitely take my word for it and know that anything that gets donated does make a difference.
You talk about maybe personalizing that for you, Caitlin, and you know how you talk about the gratification that goes along with seeing kids who are wearing the equipment and getting to use it. You know, does that, at the end of the day, you just mentioned it, but that is that really what it's all about? Like, does that feeling that you get right there just make it all worth it? And not only that, as you just said, but make you even more motivated to carry it on and grow the program further?
Yeah, well, it's definitely motivating, and I just I want to find any way possible for people to realize that it does make a difference. It's not about keeping the program going. It's about getting more people aware that gently used equipment that more often than not goes unused in your basement. Mm-hmm. Make the attempt to dig it out, because you can make a pretty big difference in a lot of kids' lives in Winnipeg, kids that just want to play hockey and wouldn't get the chance to.
And that's one of the things, you know, Caitlin, I coached hockey last year, and the cost involved in hockey, people sometimes, as you mentioned, the people who are fortunate enough to have the equipment provided for them by their parents or family members don't realize how expensive it is, and there is a fairly great disparity, especially in, there's some kids who just can't play the sport, period, because of the cost, and mm-hmm. I think you realize that when you get involved at a minor level, so it's a minor league level, so it's amazing the steps that you guys are taking to include everybody, because hockey has become more expensive, and soccer, lots of people are opting for soccer because it's cheaper, so this is a nice way also to grow the game from the grassroots level.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the most sought after equipment, especially in this program, is like junior sized equipment, because kids go through right. equipment every single season, sometimes more than once a season. Kid can go through two pairs of skates a year just because it's that growing stage. And I mean, that's however expensive hockey skates are, $300 for a pair of skates. I mean, that's seriously limiting to a lot of people.
You know, it's also worth noting that, I mean, undoubtedly, at least in my mind, hockey is the most popular sport in Canada, but soccer has overtaken it yeah. as the sport most often played by Canadian youth, and that's really a function of the fact that, you know, soccer, you buy a pair of cleats and maybe some shin pads, and yeah. it's, you know, maybe $50. Mm-hmm. Hockey, right. ice time, you know, the equipment, everything else, it has really become prohibitively expensive almost.
Yeah, well, I think you nailed it there. Like, it's, like I said, like a limiting sport for a lot of people who want to play it. But at the end of the day, it's the most popular sport in Canada, and I think every kid should get the chance to play it if they want to.
Absolutely. Caitlin, you know, we're going to have to let you go in a couple seconds. Just remind our listeners one more time where they can, how they can participate in this fabulous program and
for sure.
everything yeah. else.
Thanks, Drew. Like I said, the program kicks off today. As far as the donation period, you can drop off at any Perth Dry Cleaners location from today until October 1st. And anyone that drops off, they get entered in to win. I can't believe we haven't mentioned this yet, but an autographed Andrew Ladd jersey.
Awesome.
And if you want any more information about the program, of course, our website, passiveforward.ca. And if you want to contribute in any other way, if you, for example, don't have gently used equipment, we're now a certified charity, so we can issue charitable receipts if you do believe strongly in the cause. So
there you go.
Like I said, any information, passiveforward.ca.
Back the truck up either with equipment or back the truck up with donations of cash, and you'll get a fabulous tax receipt.
You got it.
And I'm sure your contact at Perth is devilishly handsome also, right?
He's got a voice for radio. But.
Good line, Caitlin. Caitlin Qualley, founder of the Pass It Forward program. Thanks very much. Good luck with the program, and as always, job well done.
Thanks so much, guys.
Take care, Caitlin. Thanks very much. You know, we've spoken about this, throughout our time, and we don't talk minor hockey very often, but something that I think really... That really bothers me about hockey, minor hockey especially, not so much the equipment. The equipment is going to cost whatever it does. It's the purchasing of these fancy one-piece sticks for $200, $300 at
yes.
a pop
yeah.
for kids who are 10, 11, 12, who it's just so mind-boggling. And you know, I'm certainly in no position to tell anybody how to raise their children. But to me, it just...
if I was going to ask somebody how to raise my children...
You'd ask me?
Yeah, maybe I'd ask
Okay.
You.
I mean, it just seems so bizarre to me that any parent will shell this out.
Ezzy and I coached last year.
Yeah, you guys would know this better than I would.
I've coached on a number of occasions at the 13 to 14 of the band.
Each kid has five sticks with them.
And you know what happens is then they feel like if they don't have the sticks, they won't fit in. Actually, I think in Russia, they're not even... The one-piece sticks, they feel like... And if you play a lot of hockey, the one-piece sticks, a lot of passes pop off. the stick a bit. And the truth is, the 1P6 really help you with your shot, and people, they've now become better in terms of puck handling and things like that. But what you should be working on when you're a younger hockey player is not skating, but puck control, stick handling, things like that. Your shot will come later on. They should be using, you know, either cheap 1P6 or wooden sticks to work on their handling, and then they can graduate to that level eventually. But I agree with you, Drew. A lot of the expenses on hockey, in terms of equipment, are fairly unnecessary. And I don't think it's so much the equipment making you a great player as much as it's the peer pressure that goes along with these kids. These kids are in junior high or they're in elementary school, and their friends all have it, and they want to have it. And that exerts a great amount of pressure financially on parents that aren't able to, you know, meet those expectations. And I coaching 2 years ago, and I was talking to a coach the Sturgeon team. You know, that's out by near, right up to almost where the MTS Plex is.
Sure.
And he was talking about how they don't have a lot of players this round.
The participation's going down.
Down because of the expense. And ice time is something like $150. And sometimes you're paying for 45-minute slots. You're sharing ice with people. And the ice time's expensive. The sticks are expensive. And and that's a reason why there's a drop in enrollment of playing, you know, hockey.
And it is a concern. I mean, this is something that you know, has always fascinated me, too, because, you know, we all played hockey. And, you know, some of us, you know, got, you know, more expensive equipment than others. But the problem I see is it is a, I don't know if you want to call it cultural problem with hockey, though, as it relates to equipment. But I think the focus is too much in hockey, more so than any other sport, that it's important to have that stick, or it's important to have that $600 pair of Nike skates, when really it's more so about developing your skills.
That's right.
Like you said, the shot is something that comes, you know, for kids when they're more 15, 16, 17, but the people are fixated with having this expensive equipment because they look at one kid has that equipment. Oh, well, that's better. Well, it's actually not better. Equipment does not necessarily make you
better.
That's
just it. I'd rather have, I'm just going to tell for the kids who listen, I'd rather have the kid with the cheapest equipment who's playing shinny every day on the rink than the guy with the most expensive equipment who's going to crazy hockey camps and spending thousands and thousands of dollars. The guy who's playing shinny with the most cheap, with the cheapest equipment may be a heck of a lot better than the other player. Doesn't matter how he looks, matters how he plays.
Let's leave it there. When we come back on the other side of the break, we're going to get some of the more audio that Remus took from the MTS Iceplex earlier today. And we have a concussion expert, Dr. Zachary Ekman, coming up at 2:30. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Jet. 2:15 in the afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a good thing I can read non-digital clock over there, because I keep looking down at the clock on the computer. And the clock on the computer is set in Eastern time, and it gets me confused on it. I'm like, wait a minute, shouldn't we be off the air if it says 3:15?
You know, Drew, you had me and Richard over at your house this last week, and when Drew answers the door, that's what he says, welcome to paradise.
Let's be more accurate. I think you broke into
wearing
my house.
Wearing a robe.
Where's my robe, anyways?
You have a lot of shag carpet.
You know, people at home can't see this, but Drew's looking very good as usual. He's wearing a corduroy jacket, and you know, on Friday at the media orientation, I would be absolutely shocked if anybody was dressed better than you. Custom tailored suit,
you look good.
Haircut, freshly shaven. I don't know if you've been fake baking or working out, but I mean, you're looking good. You're looking good, right in time for.
He's been real baking and not working out.
You guys almost done. Feel good? You guys are happy?
We're done.
You're good? You're good? Okay, just making sure. You want to talk about a little bit, you know, we've spent most of this time today talking about the Winnipeg Jets, as I think is going to be our want throughout the course of the season. But, you know, of all the players we've mentioned, I think the official return of one player means more to the city of Winnipeg than almost as much as the other guys, and that's Teemu Selänne returning to the Anaheim Ducks. He made it official, and that just I believe it's December 17th.
That's
is
correct.
That right?
That's
that
correct.
Game against Anaheim, December 17th, is going. The ovation that Teemu is going to get from the people in Winnipeg is going to be something to remember.
It's it's going to be spectacular. Obviously, game one is going to, you know, take the cake in terms of importance in the city, but December 17th, and people have said it, so I'm just echoing their sentiments, is going to be a close second. I think the bond between Teemu Selänne and this city, our generation, others, you know, older generations as well, is I wouldn't say unmatched, because I think Bobby Hall, we talked about it on the way here, Bobby Hall and the effect that his signing had, the Portage in Maine, had on the, you know, our parents, and how that legitimized hockey in Winnipeg. I think those are the two figures that people think about in, with you know, hockey, and Dale Hawerchuk. But the bond between Tamu Solani and the fans is, it's hard to explain. You wouldn't meet, and I think we've all met him. You won't meet a nicer guy.
No.
I mean, a gentleman, a true professional, a guy who has always succeeded and always done so in the utmost professional way. And I think that those players that are able to score 600 goals are few and far between.
Well, Richie, we were at the practice today, as we've mentioned a few times during the show, and we ran into Juha Hitela,
yeah,
who works for the second largest Finnish newspaper. We tried to... maybe we'll get him on at some point this year, hopefully. He was talking to me about why he was there, and he was actually there to cover Jani Pessinen, who's on a tryout contract. He's the only Finnish player that's at training camp. But he told me, and I mentioned this to you guys already, but he said that after Timo Solani's rookie season, when he scored 76 goals, 132 points, that was when the Finnish newspaper put someone stationed in North America. And what I found remarkable about that is that that was after Jari Kurri, who before Solani was arguably the most famous player to ever come out of Finland, but
he still maybe.
Still maybe over Solani, but in Winnipeg, and I'm talking about the Jets, not the WHA Jets, you know, Timo Solani was only here for 2.5 years, but his impact was absolutely
That's the
remarkable.
Crazy part.
That's right. Only 2.5 years.
That's the craziest part.
And what's going to make that December 17th game all the more special is that the people of Winnipeg never got to say goodbye to Timo.
Never.
He, you know, he was traded in that final year because the new ownership that was coming in demanded it, more or less.
They demanded a deal of either him or Tkachuk.
Yeah, they demanded. And, you know, and he never came back to Winnipeg. Anaheim didn't play again in Winnipeg after that deal.
That's right.
You know, so we have, there's been this pent-up emotion for the city of Winnipeg, for its hockey fans, to say thank you to this guy. And I mean, and the soft spot that he still has for Winnipeg. You know, I refused, you know, he could have retired, and he's a surefire Hall of Famer. There's no question about it.
No question.
But to me, I believe that a small part of it probably factored in that he'd be able to go back and play that one final game in Winnipeg, or what we assume is going to be that one final game in Winnipeg.
Guys, there's going to be a lot of sorry, Richie, to cut you off, but there's going to be a lot of moments, goosebump moments this year. I was just thinking about that. But when he steps onto the ice and he's given a standing ovation, that standing ovation, whether that's when he first steps onto the ice or if it's during the game, I think is going to be one of those moments this year, maybe the moment when you actually almost get teary-eyed, and mm-hmm. because he is the most popular. I've said this. I think he was the most popular athlete the city's ever had, and that's just my personal opinion.
Well, amongst our generation, you're probably right. It's probably Timu and it's probably Milt Stegall.
Yeah,
I would say it's those two. And amongst, you know, the generation before us, it's probably Bobby Hall.
Yeah.
Watching Bobby Hall in his prime was just watching probably one of the top, one of the best players. It was watching one of the best players of all time.
Bobby Hall is arguably the greatest left winger of all time.
That's right. So, I mean, you know,
after Drew Mandel, of course.
Of course. But
well, Drew's moved to the left
right
wing.
You're right winger
Drew's
or left winger?
Drew's moved to the left wing from the right wing.
That's very clever. Richards is not speaking about hockey necessarily there, but we'll let it slide. You know, Timu is going to, you know, for the generation that has been watching hockey, for what's going to be the majority of the, you know, ticket holders at the MTS Center, it's Timu, and everybody remembers where they were in 96 when he, you know, scored the hat trick goal against Quebec to
92-93.
Pardon me, what did I say? 96.
We know what you meant.
Yeah, when he scored the hat trick.
Where were you? And you got Drew. You okay?
Yeah, choking up a little bit there. I got not emotional. Curious.
That's not from the Timu Solani memory. It's from the muffin that Drew was eating earlier.
Drew, where were you when Timo Solani got traded? Do you remember?
And how old were you, 35?
Where was I when Timo got traded? That's a good question. I don't remember where I was. Do you remember where you were?
Of course.
Where were you?
I was outside playing shinny with my friend, and my dad came up and walked up. I think it was to pick us up, and then he told me that he got traded. And I immediately was just
crestfallen,
shocked. And all I could say to him was, what, did they get Paul Kariya?
It was like our Wayne Gretzky 1989 trade. That was what it was like. Everyone was like, what?
Yeah.
Why would you trade Timo Solani?
Summer of 88, yeah.
Well, you know, the thought process back then, his knees are shot. His knees.
The peck ahead, but.
At 25 years old?
And all, my second
thought. I'm not saying it made sense.
My second thought was,
he went on to get 1,200
Tell me it
points.
Was for Paul Kariya. Somebody ended up being for junk. In any event, that was what my point there is. It's such
like
a
Jabrodowski had a couple good years.
Such a memorable moment. I'm gonna ignore that. Such a memorable moment that to me, you know, there's certain significant moments that you remember where you were, and that was one of them for me. That's why I'm just relating it to myself. I was playing outdoor hockey.
Yeah,
it was February, I believe. And I remember the exact, like, I remember the day, like, very vividly, and it was, to me, that's your boyhood idol.
Sure, you know, for a lot of people. Because he was so accessible.
The thing is, Drew, about, exactly, he was, but the thing about him being a boyhood idol is he never let you down as a boyhood idol.
No.
He wasn't fake. He was what he was, and he's genuine. And I think that's what people gravitate towards.
And the media, you know, it's rare when you see the media sort of come out and be, a cheerleader for a guy. But, you know, with Timu, he's like, you know, the guy always answered every question. He never ducked anything. He was always accessible. He gave us everything we wanted. He was a great quote. Like, what's the worst thing that people could have said about Timu Solani? Maybe he shouldn't be racing cars in Finland in the offseason?
Well, that's the thing. I've never heard anyone say anything negative about him, just in Winnipeg or anywhere.
People at the beginning of his career, you guys are missing, because, like, we look at it, I think, a little more wine and roses than we look back. There was rumblings early on in his career that he was a selfish hockey player and that he was happy when he played well, and he wasn't happy if the team won and he didn't play well. And first of all, I can say something. A guy can be, you know, evaluated and self-evaluative and think to himself, okay, I didn't play great. I'm not happy with how I played. I'm happy the team won, but I still want to get better. So that doesn't necessarily mean he's a bad teammate. That later on faded away. He won the cup. And he's always been a great team. But there were rumblings of that, and that was one of the rumblings of why they kept him versus Tkachuk, whether or not that was actually the reason. It's proven to be incorrect in terms of his, you know, it's essentially calling him selfish.
Yeah.
He was not selfish. And if he was at any point, he grew out of it. And so I just want people to realize that those were some of the rumblings. To me, they were untrue. And even if they were true, if you keep yourself to a very high standard, it doesn't mean you're a selfish person or a selfish hockey player.
No, I mean, exactly. You're playing for a team, but you're also playing for yourself, because in order to improve the team, you have to be playing to the best of your abilities also. So, I mean, you know, it doesn't really square in my mind, but I think that's just, you know, people looking for reasons to dislike somebody.
Once again, Drew, every game this year in Winnipeg and beyond is going to be special in its own little way, just because it's the return of the Jets. But if I were you, and I there's a lot of people out there that are with us, you don't want to miss that game December 17th. And I'm not, you can watch it on TV, but you don't want to miss that game, because it's going to be covered by the media, you know, like very, very, very closely. But that game, mark it on your calendar, December 17th. And a lot of people already have.
You know what I find interesting? You know, we're both, you know, 2-3 weeks away from the start of the regular season in Winnipeg here, the October 9th game. And there has been no chatter as of yet as to a sort of a public gathering to watch that game. Now,
there is going to be the game on festivities at the Forks leading up to the game.
Yeah, but that's at the start of the, I'm talking about a big place for people. People are going to watch, if you can't get into the arena, because, right. I mean, they obviously demand outweigh supply.
You mean
that
like
case.
A situation like the outside of the of CBC in Vancouver?
Yeah, something where there's a large, where people can gather to watch that game, hopefully without the negative reaction to what happened in Vancouver.
Drew, what about the backyard of your new house?
Yeah,
is it big enough?
What about your house, period?
No, that's not probably big enough. But, I'm thinking, is it Portage and Maine, and they set up big screens? Is it, Canadian Stadium, and you watch it on the big Jumbotron?
I think the one thing that you're forgetting, Drew.
Is it's October?
Yeah.
It's not
June.
I mean, it's not going to be, balmy, but it could very well be reasonable. I know weather certainly does factor in. But
let's get Sylvia Cruz. I got a retirement.
Yeah,
I don't know about that. I think people are going to just watch it at their local restaurant, home, bar. I mean, I don't know. Maybe there is something planned. But Portage and Maine, I don't know if that's really practically possible. But
I'd be surprised if there isn't a public gathering of some sort.
It would have to be. If it is, hopefully it's at Portage and Maine.
Yeah. Well, obviously.
Portage and Podine. Remember that? We had Sean Podine on.
That was funny.
Yeah. I wasn't at that. I actually wasn't at that show. I don't know where I was.
That's why it was funny.
No. Oh, because I wasn't there?
You're doing Zumba.
I was at my Zumba practice that day. Yeah, good. Well done. Let's head to commercial break. When we come back on the other side, we're going to talk to Dr. Zachary Ekman. He's a concussion specialist. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. 2:30 in the afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. And Michael Remus is over in the other room queuing up some audio that you're going to hear in the next segment. Before then, let's go.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to the program Dr. Zachary Ekman. He is a concussion specialist, and we thought who better to talk concussions with than a concussion specialist. Let me see if I get this bio correct. He's an undergrad at Iowa State University, doctorate in clinical psychology at the Minnesota School of Professional Psychology, internship in neuropsychology and acute brain injury rehabilitation, postdoctoral fellowship in neuropsychology, and he's now a postdoctoral fellow in neuropsychology. Dr. Ekman, or if I can call you Zach, did I miss anything?
No, you got it. You can call me Zach. Thank you.
Okay, and this we'll start with this one. I'll start you off with a nice, easy question because I'm not sure how this can happen.
I think I have a concussion after Drew reading all those credentials, Zach.
Yeah, it's very possible.
How can you be a fan of both the University of Minnesota and the University of North Dakota?
Okay, I don't know if that's necessarily an easy question. I grew up in Minnesota, so I'm a diehard Gophers fan, but my grandpa actually coached the North Dakota Sioux hockey team back in the 60s and was there when they won their first national championship. So I still have his little pendant on my keychain, and I grew up in a Sioux household, and, you know, I cheer for them both. But when it comes down to it and the two play against each other, it's not an easy situation.
I imagine not. You know, Zach, when I've sort of at the beginning of this year, I've made a commitment, and I've said it on air a couple times, in the past couple weeks, that I'm no longer going to be calling, a concussion a concussion. I'm going to be calling a concussion brain damage. Am I accurate in saying so?
Yeah, a concussion is a mild traumatic brain injury, and that's something that really needs to become more prevalent when people speak of them, because the term concussion, holds a connotation that people think they're going to automatically get better from it after a short period of time because it's been thrown around for decades. But what we're realizing now is it is a mild traumatic brain injury, and it's affecting the actual physiology of the brain, and it needs to be spoken so as such.
Zach, the guy that has the probably the most famous concussion right now is obviously Sidney Crosby, and he held a press conference a few weeks ago and basically said that, he was at 90%. Two-part question. What does that mean for someone who has post-concussion syndrome? And what maybe is your opinion on when we can expect Sidney Crosby back and, what he's going through right now?
Okay. I'll answer the second part first.
Okay. I think that might have been a three-parter. Sorry.
Sure. As far as expecting him back, there really is no definitive answer. And with somebody like Sidney Crosby, who is absolutely not just the face of the Pittsburgh Penguins, but the face of the NHL, they're going to obviously err on the side of caution. The guy's got a long career ahead of him, and there's no need to get in the way with somebody that's been such a positive attribute for a sport that was struggling there for a while. As far as 90%, what I've been reading recently in terms of Sidney is when he's resting and he's not participating in physical activity, he's essentially symptom-free. And what people don't realize is that doesn't mean that you're okay to go back in the game. When it comes to actual assessment and putting players back in the game, they need to be exposed to physical activity that stimulates what it's going to be like when they're in the actual game, because all of a sudden when we start exercising and our heart rate increases and our blood pressure goes up, et cetera, all of a sudden these symptoms can start to manifest themselves again because the body is just changing. And, our body reacts one way and our brain interprets everything that's going on in our body. So once there's changes, even if it's just in our heart rhythms, it can actually affect the physiology of the brain. So what I've heard is he's starting to participate in actual activities, and the big concern is how is he going to handle contact going forward. And that's something I'm certainly going to leave up to the physicians of the Pittsburgh Penguins, because I would not want to be in the position to determine, okay, when is it okay for him to start taking a hit.
Zach, I want to make sure I'm correct about this. Is it true that once you have a concussion, you have more of a propensity for further concussions?
Absolutely, and concussions are not a 1+1=2 situation. Once you have a concussion, they can really affect each other exponentially. So there's a lot of things to take into effect, and one interesting story, I can't name the team, but I'm familiar. I heard a physician for one of the major sports teams won't tell any more details than that, talk at, or lecture one time, and he, you know, he does his assessments prior to each player entering the draft for the respective sport. And if a player has sustained 3 diagnosed concussions at any point during their playing career, that person is immediately removed from their playing from their draft board, because the physician just does not want to take the chance of having another one, and that which could be a career ender.
Zach, do you have to sometimes protect the players from themselves? You know, I was reading an article, I forget where I read it this week, that the NHL is putting into place standards for concussions. And then, if there's certain symptoms that you admit to, they're going to take you into, you know, the quote dark room, and they're going to evaluate you. Do you worry at all that players, in fear of losing their jobs by going and admitting concussions, will hide them and then further damage their brains?
If they're not educated, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword, because players are going to want to play, especially if there's a lot on the line. I mean, you talk about veterans that are in a Stanley Cup race or something like right. that, and they're not going to want a minor concussion or something that they've dealt with, you know, 10, 15 times during their career to derail them from being in the game and helping their team win. But with the amount of awareness that's growing in the field right now, and I mean, you can't watch SportsCenter one time without hearing about a concussion, or right. go to any of the websites without hearing about it, I think players are obviously starting to realize across all sports that this is not something that you can mess around with, and it's something that they need to be absolutely diligent in and treating. So I hope that it's getting closer to that. It really all comes down to just awareness, education, and I think all sports are doing what they can to educate their players.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Dr. Zachary Ekman, a expert in concussions. I'm going to call you an expert.
I don't know if there is such a thing, Drew. You got to be careful with that. If there were more experts in concussions, then there wouldn't be so much confusion as to what an assessment actually looks like. So be careful using that word.
Sure, but for the purposes of today, we'll call you an expert.
All right.
You know, you said the word minor concussion earlier. Is there such thing as a minor concussion?
To a degree. You know, you hear about grade 1, grade 2, grade 3, and those, I don't know where those terms come from. They actually don't exist. You hear it a lot more in football than any other sports, and somebody says, oh, they had a grade 2 concussion, you know, they will probably be out for this while. The grades don't actually exist, because even the smallest of concussion can affect people differently. Some people will recover in, you know, 1 to 3 days from the exact force or blow, whereas other people may be still having post-concussive symptoms, you know, a year or two, a year and a half later. It really all depends on the person, like you said earlier, their concussion history, how well they take care of their body, what kind of shape they're in. I mean, there are so many factors to consider.
Zach, I mean, this is a pretty simple question, I guess. Well, not a simple question, but a short question. Fighting, is there a rule for it in hockey?
Is there a rule for fighting in hockey?
Is there a rule? Like, do you think that fighting should be abolished?
You're talking to a hockey fan as well, so can I just abstain from that question for fear of self-incrimination?
I'm with you.
I like fighting, so it's hard for me to say that, you know, they need to rule it out. But, you know, I think if anything, the first step would be to work with the referees and educate them as far as symptoms to look for immediately, so that they can intervene a little bit quicker. And I've actually noticed that just as a casual observer lately, noticing that it seems like refs step in a little bit faster than they used to, and I have no idea if that has anything to do with concussions and education, but I think that would be the first step. You know, fighters are going to be fighters, and it's a huge part of the game, and I don't know if there's any research talking about the number of concussions comparing fighters versus non-fighters in the game, so I don't know if it's going to make the greatest of differences, but really it just comes down to education, and hopefully they go at each other's bodies instead.
You know, Zach, we spoke to somebody who's involved in, I think, the discipline in terms of the National Hockey League, and they were speaking about how fighting didn't lead to as many concussions as maybe people thought. I guess, is this what you've seen in your viewing of, you know, football and hockey and other sports? Is it more so the player who is unprepared and does not see the hit coming, whether it be a light hit or a hard hit, as opposed to the player who's ready to get hit but just gets hit really hard?
In some cases, one thing people don't really or fail to recognize is in hockey, there's not a lot of head hits. People aren't leading with their heads when they're going to make checks. They're leading with their bodies, and the primary number of head hits that result in concussion are, you know, cross checks into the board, and the NHL is doing a great job of addressing that with some of their rules. But what people don't realize is that you can sustain a concussion from a body blow. And for people that have been exposed to repeated blows throughout the years, ever since they were kids or whenever checking began, you can start to generalize concussions from body blows. And anytime there's whiplash or any sort of force that causes the brain to go against the force of gravity, whether it's from a hit to the legs and the whiplash is so bad on the way down to the ice, or just a hard body-to-body check, a concussion can occur, and in some cases, those can be some of the most severe. There's a reason why boxers go at each other's bodies. I mean, it's not just to inflict pain, but it really does affect cognition and concentration and reaction and processing speed, and hits to the body can really start to generalize themselves over the years.
Zach, you mentioned that you're a fan of hockey. As we all are, but we're also, you know, there's other responsibilities that we have as, you know, broadcast journalists, and obviously you're a doctor who studied the brain. As both a doctor and a fan, what is your personal opinion about the one issue, the main issue that needs to be addressed to reduce concussions? You mentioned that you know, and we mentioned this too, that fighting is something that we think is maybe, you know, unfairly viewed as something that needs to be taken out. What is the one thing that you believe that the NHL, the NHLPA, and amateur hockey associations need to address first, right now, to reduce concussions, you know, as soon as possible in hockey?
Absolutely, without a doubt, across the board, it's education and awareness. Understanding what are the signs of concussion, and, you know, you'll hear players that will say that there were games that I played in that I don't even remember, because their body gets so used to concussion symptoms that they don't even realize that they're actually having one. So I know that it's tough for players, and they probably get a little bit annoyed with hearing that word and going through all the lectures over and over, but just recognizing the signs, having competent clinicians on the sidelines or you know, on the side of the ice, and make sure that they're being completely and fully cognizant of what is going on and looking for any sort of changes in behavior. People think that a concussion just has to do with cognitive symptoms, so a change in memory or attention, reaction speed, orientation, but there are a lot of physical and emotional domains that need to be addressed as well, and that's something that awareness is a big piece of it. And if the players are aware that, listen, when you start noticing physical changes, emotional changes, even changes in your sleep pattern, that's time where it's time to speak up to your clinician or your physician and say, hey, something isn't right here. So it obviously is education and awareness.
We'll leave it there, Dr. Zachary Ekman. Thanks for joining us this afternoon on the Legal Curve Hockey Show, and congratulations, apparently, on the new addition to the family.
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised you haven't heard him crying, so he must be doing well right now. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Take care, Zach. Thanks
very
much.
Take care.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right.
Let's go to our final commercial. When we come back, we'll get some more audio from today down at MTS Iceplex. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment here on this Saturday afternoon in our new time slot. You can find us each and every Saturday, noon to 3 here on Sports Radio 1290.
Drew, do they call you the Southern Man in Kentucky?
That's exactly what they don't call me, in fact.
Nice.
I was ready for that. I was going to jump in there if Ezzy didn't.
I'm glad the two of you are on the same wavelength brain-wise. Let's welcome to the program. He's been down at MTS Iceplex really all day. Michael Remus, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Remus, you know what? I got to say something. You're doing an unbelievable job. You always do. But you're becoming like the Chris D of covering the Winnipeg Jets.
I don't know what I'm becoming, but it's a lot of fun. I even got my first
hate tweet. We read it on air.
My first hate tweet. You guys read it on air.
Oh, yeah. It's funny.
It wasn't a hate tweet. It was
definitely some hate, but I was
the guy threatened to throw Remus into a toilet. That's pretty much about his hate tweet.
No, he said that he like could be threatened.
Yeah, he says that I should be.
Do you know who the guy? Do you know who the guy is?
No, I have no idea who he is.
But he obviously must know who you are, because unless he just saw it in your Twitter photo, which is
really quite legendary.
I think that he saw my posting of my Thorburn interview on the website or something. He's obviously a fan, so I'll give him props.
Okay, well there you go.
Well, I know firsthand that Remus isn't to be messed with.
Yeah,
just happy that you guys are talking.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, and we're just happy you guys are talking. Yeah. You got a couple clips that from some audio
sure.
you took.
I got a couple.
Sure, forget about hockey fighting.
No, we're talking about the audio first.
Richie is itching right now.
What? I don't know what's going on
he
here.
He wants
guys.
To talk about the incident from Wednesday night.
Am I in Ezra's fight?
Well, we had a little misunderstanding. Can we do the clips first
and then we'll go back to that?
Fine, we'll go with the clips first.
Okay. You want to talk about the clips?
Sure, I'll talk about the first clip. The first clip is Evander Kane. It's just a brief clip. You know, they asked him, where are the goals going to come from this year? You know, Atlanta finished 20th in the league in goals for last year, and they don't really have a bona fide scorer on their team. So they asked him, you know, where are the goals going to come from? So, Timmy, let's hear the clip.
I think we're underrated in that category. I think we have a lot of guys who can put the puck in the net. You know, Little, Ladd, Buff, Wheels. There's a lot of guys, Timmy Stapleton. So I think we're going to have a lot more goals and be a more high scoring team than a lot of people think.
Do you put the weight on your shoulders and take that next step this season?
Yeah, definitely. I think every season I want to get better and grow as a player. So. This year is definitely going to be a big year for me, and I'm definitely counting on myself to really push in terms of that department.
What's the next clip that we're going
to
hear?
Well, I just thought maybe we'd talk about about that clip for a bit.
Yeah, Drew,
so
come on.
Where are the goals going to come from, guys? And is he right? Is this an underrated goal-scoring team?
Yeah, well, I think they aren't going to be in the top half of the league in goal score. They're going to struggle to score goals, but I think they're a little bit underrated in maybe a sense. A few other players, like a Blake Wheeler, and maybe Eric Fair's numbers will go up a little bit. But I see what he's saying. But I think that they will struggle to score goals, definitely.
And maybe they have a lot of underrated scorers, guys, but
I tend to side with Richie on this
one.
Yeah,
we've gone over that on the show before. If this happens, I hate when there's a lot of ifs on a team.
They're going to have to win a lot of 3-2 games, Richie. They're not going to blow a lot of teams out.
That's great. Well, you get lucky. You win some games, you win, you lose some games. But I think score is going to be an issue. They're going to have some guys who are going to take steps forward. Don't get me wrong. But not all of them are going to.
A guy like Burmistrov, as the second-line center, is going to have to show a lot.
First of all, we don't know if he's going to be the second-line center. Right. If he is a second-line center, will he be able to take the next step? He's got a lot of steps to take.
That's right, and you can't. And it's asking a lot of a guy to take the next step, or to have his next step be that significant that they're ready to rock.
Evander Kane's career progression has been very impressive, moving from 14 goals to 19 goals. You think this year maybe 25 plus, maybe 30 if he's really have a good season. Probably 25, 26, 27. Then the season after, you look for 30, 35, and then you look for 40. I think he can be 35 to 40 goal scorer, but that takes time, and
you can't rush it. I mean, goal scoring is not something that just happens, you know, magically. Next clip.
All right. The next clip is with Dustin Byfuglien. You know, they asked him about talking about Charlie Huddy as the former Oilers defenseman as coach and what it's going to be like working with him and, you know, what the strengths of the defense are. So, Tim?
You know, for what I know about the guy, he sounds like a good guy. I'm excited to have the opportunity to work with him, and I think he feels the same way. We got a good group of guys on the point back there, and I think he's going to he's going to teach us a lot, and, you know, hopefully we can go back and forth and, you know, adapt pretty quickly.
What are the strengths of the defense corps as a whole?
I think we're just, you know, we're well-rounded, you know, throughout our D. And we got, you know, three good sets, four. That, you know, I'm not afraid. Who's ever out there, we're going to be pretty comfortable if who's ever on the ice.
That was Dustin Byfuglien talking about what he expects with new, you know, the coach we assume is going to be running the defense, and that's Charlie Huddy.
You know, guys, they are balanced. I mean, this is, I think, and this is my personal opinion. Richie and me have argued about this a little bit. I'm just saying maybe I rate them a little bit higher.
If Bogosian can become shut down, they are very well-rounded. They have offense, they have defense, they have skating.
And this is something we do agree on, and it's not just Richie and I, that's all of us. The strength of the team is goaltending, and defense. That's the strength of the team.
That's a lot of defensemen.
You know, a lot of questions were asked to the guys about Andrei Pavlich. And, you know, everyone has said, you know, he can be, you know, a top-flight goaltender.
Reem, is it pronounced, and I'm being serious, is it pronounced Pavlich or Pavlik?
You know,
well, some people say Pavlik.
We'll just have to check the pronunciation.
Were people at the scrum calling him? Did you hear it at all or no?
Andre.
But no, last name.
I don't. We'll look in the media guide, and that is.
They have the pronunciation guide.
There
is an NHL pronunciation.
Well, I know what I'm doing tonight. Then
that seems like something.
I had no plans, Drew. That's what I'm going to do tonight. Memorize all of the pronunciation for the Jets.
Okay.
I mean,
go ahead and do that.
Sounds fun. A little popcorn, a little popcorn, a little pronunciation. It'll be good times.
Remus,
whatever. What do you mean? You're throwing it to me?
Well, you're talking about Pavlik.
Unless you want to go see Bucky Larson, Drew.
No, I'm good.
0% of Rotten Tomatoes. That makes me want to see it.
Yeah, I kind of want to see Bucky Larson,
too. No movie gets 0%.
You got zero.
Even Glitter. Remember Glitter? Drew, you saw that movie. You had that poster up.
That's Glee that he watches.
No, Glitter with Mariah Carey.
I think Glitter's the Mariah Carey movie.
Oh, sorry.
All I know is...
It's your brother who watches Glee, Richie.
He does watch Glee.
I know. Yeah. It's the girlfriend cracks the whip and sits and
makes him watch Glee. He might watch Glee, but he also has a girlfriend, so I don't. So maybe I should start watching Glee.
And then a girlfriend magically appears.
I think it's the other way around.
Or a boyfriend, really, for that matter.
It's the other way around.
True. Do you guys want to go back to Pavlik, or are we? Yeah.
Well, no. The point is that he has the skill to be number one netminder. Last year, by the way, he was apparently had issues with being his conditioning. So he has to get in better shape. I'm not sure what his condition is in this summer, but I know that was alluded to a lot. He has the talent. Goaltending is a funny game. You can look really good. You can look really bad. It's a mystery to many scouts.
You should maybe give Pavlik your P90X tape.
Yeah, we'll see. Exactly. We'll see. We'll get him in shape, but. Before we go off the air today,
you've been champing at the bit to do this since Wednesday night.
Chomping.
It's champing. We've had this conversation.
You're the one who made the mistake in the first place. I should be the one getting mad.
Well, he's the one who just said chomping again.
You're going to be chomping on lunch.
That's true.
Go ahead.
You want to take this one? You can take this one.
Well, you know, on Wednesday there was an incident. Can we have the music here, Tim?
Reem, I will hug you after the end of this.
We're at the Grove restaurant. We were having a nice Illegal Curve meeting, you know, to prepare for the show, along with many other stuff involving IllegalCurve.com. And Ezzy had put the ban on talking about this. You can keep the music going. I got the ban, but yesterday I got
careful
the okay.
Careful here what you say, Richie.
Yesterday I got the okay. Remus and Ezzy had a little bit of a spat, and we want to make sure that they're best of friends still.
Spat. Yeah.
You know what? We've had a lot of arguments throughout this, naturally, but... This music is killing me.
You know what? It's been stressful, you know, getting the show back on, and we've gone through a lot together. And I mean, there was a little bit of an incident, but it was nothing. And we already have cleared the air.
Can you guys hug it out in honor of the end of Entourage?
Let's have an
honor
hug.
Turn the music up even more.
Take a picture so you can tweet it after of us hugging.
Yeah,
but we
get a picture.
I think we're good. Oh, we're gonna have to pose. Are you ready?
I think we can wrap it up there. We're not even going to bother to do cheers and jeers. As far as I'm concerned, that's the cheer for all of us this week on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'd like to wish big thanks to our guests for this week. Shane Knighty, he's the analyst here on Sports Radio 1290. You'll be hearing him covering all the Jets games. Roy McGregor from the Globe and Mail joined us. Kaylin Qualley, the founder of the Pass It Forward Hockey Equipment Program. You know, that's also another cheer for this week here on the show. Definitely
cheer that for sure.
Support the Pass It Forward Program on now until October 1st at any Perth's outlet. You can drop off your equipment. Thank you to Dr. Zachary Ekman, a concussion specialist, for joining us. We encourage you to follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And of course, the website is www.illegalcurve.com, which is updated every day, multiple times per day. Your home for Jets hockey here in Winnipeg. We encourage you also, in case you missed any of this program, subscribe to it on iTunes. Get it sent to your iPod each and every week, and you can listen to it at your convenience. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Richard Pollock, for Michael Remus, and for producer Tim, my name is Drew Mindell, and remember, we'll be on next Saturday, noon to 3 again, and if it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.